This episode of 1v1, the Creator Interview Series, is brought to you by, well, you. If you want to learn how to support this show and the Boss Rush Media family of podcasts, head over to patreon.com/bossrushmedia or search for us on the Patreon app on your smart device. Thanks for helping us build something better.
Everyone, and welcome to 1v1 with the Boss Rush Network. I'm your host, Stephanie Klimov, flying solo today, and I have the absolute pleasure of interviewing Z, the CEO of Serenity Forge. Welcome, Z.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So I'm going to give that quick one or two liner about Serenity Forge, but then I kind of want you to, you know, color it all in for me. This is what we have you here for. So Serenity Forge, I'm familiar with as a brand, is a video game development and publishing company based out of Boulder, Colorado, right? Yes. And I believe you work both domestically and internationally with other developers, vendors, publishers, and you guys really seem to focus on impactful and meaningful video game experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. We are here, Colorado native. We've been making games for almost a decade. We very much, like you said, focus on creating meaningful, emotionally impactful games that challenge the way you think. So basically games that are very narrative driven, games that are very story driven, character driven, and really more importantly, kind of after you're done playing the games, it kind of makes you kind of rethink about our world, our society, yourselves and each other.
Absolutely love that. And we'll get to that in some of the questions below. But just to share some of my experiences, as I touched upon before, maybe I could ask this later on, but Serenity Forge is a brand that it just somehow I've always seemed to recognize. So, you know, when you throw out like some of the bigger names, obviously like Nintendo or Naughty Dog, they're well known because they're major companies. And yet at the same time, Serenity Forge just always seemed to stick out, like subconsciously. Like I recognized it when I saw the emails, like right before I attended PAX East. I recognized the logo. I'm trying to remember what game I had. I'll get to it. It's probably in the interview notes. But, you know, Doki Doki Literature Club. I'm like, oh, it's all connecting together. So, and I'm just overall a big fan of not just the indie space, but I'm a big believer that video games are art. That's why when people said, oh, did you catch this movie or show, or do you read this book? Not that I don't read books or I don't watch TV, but for me, I consume a lot of my stories or prefer to consume my stories with video games. So nothing wrong with sitting down and, I guess, blowing stuff up in a shooter, but I love to be mentally stimulated and really think about the characters or development or events. So just want to throw that out here. So I'm just very excited to have you.
Absolutely. No, that's awesome. I mean, for us, it's kind of like, when you look at video games in general, you really are looking at a lot of different industries all combined together. I feel like video games as a term is really loaded, right? You can have, something like League of Legends as a video game, but you can also have something like Gone Home as a video game.
Yep.
And it could be all over the place. And I think the ways that we see it is always that we look at video games, or at least, the games coming out of Serenity Forge, we're very focused on games almost as literature than something like a sport or a toy, rather. So in general, when you think about the Serenity Forge brand, I think one of the things that we hear a lot of people say is just that, oh yeah, we remember your brand, we remember your games, because it really was a meaningful story for me, because it helped me think about the world in different ways. And a lot of the times, even though our games may be short, people end up thinking a lot more about it after it's over, and they carry our stories with them for the rest of their lives.
Love it. So I really wanted to start with this, and please divulge as little or as much information as you want. I'm going to honestly either put the link in our show notes or just tweet the heck out of it. Now, I will say, generally speaking, in the past, when I go on a product website, whether it's in the gaming industry or any other industry, I don't usually go to the about page. as a consumer. I just generally don't. As I get older, I'm curious to know about the things I'm investing in. And especially now that I'm part of Boss Rush, when I'm, you know, prior to my interviews, obviously I do my homework. And I'm not just saying this, Z. I was very touched and inspired by your story. I was like, not that I was like, oh, this is just some guy, but you know, you don't know what you're going to expect. And so for the listeners, if you go on to Serenity Forge, let me make sure I get the right URL, serenityforge.com/about. Yes, that's it. There's like a quick, like an animated storytelling of how you got into gaming, so to speak, how it saved your life pretty much, which led you to finding Serenity Forge. So maybe I don't want to spoil it. I do want people to click on that link and listen to it. It's just a couple minutes, but it's mind-blowing. But do you mind, now that I have you in front of me, like, I genuinely want to know just that quick story and everything behind it. Very inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to share a little bit about kind of what happened. And by the way, thank you very much for checking it out. It's obviously very, very close to me, and it means a lot to me that you spent that time. But yeah, I mean, basically, you know, I grew up, I was a first generation immigrant from China. I moved here when I was 10 years old. And growing up, you know, being a foreigner was tough. And throughout all of middle school and high school, you know, I was kind of this loser nerd that didn't really have a lot of friends and didn't do so great in school. And I just kind of, you know, played video games all the time. And that was really the only thing that I was able to find escape in. Well, basically what happened was, in my first year of college, just a couple months into my college, I'll kind of go into a little bit of detail, but hopefully not too gruesome. But basically, I ended up having a nosebleed for 14 hours straight. And then at the time I didn't really care too much about it, because I was like, whatever, you know.
Yeah, you're like, it's just stress or something.
You're a dumb kid, right? Like, yeah. You don't really think about that being weird. And then eventually I went to the health center, and then they did some tests on me, and they realized that I had a really serious illness. And that night, basically, I was rushed to the hospital. I went to the ER, and I was told I only had a couple hours left. It just all happened basically within 24 hours. And that was such a crazy moment for me. And obviously, miraculously, I didn't die. But I did end up being hospitalized for 2 years after that event. So during that 2 years, that was some of the most difficult moments of my life. I was this 18-year-old teenager who is just, you know, ready to go out there and, you know, screw shit up. And
starting.
Right, exactly. And now I have to be bedbound and not be able to do anything. And I'm alone. And I'm constantly not only that, I'm still being constantly told, oh, maybe you'll have, you know, a few more days. Maybe I'll have, a couple more weeks. Maybe I'll have a couple more months. So, you know, as a kid, you don't really, it's weird in that position where you're like, oh, well, I'm only going to be around for 2 more months. So why bother about my future? I'll just do whatever is fun and kind of waste my time, I guess, right? It doesn't really matter. There is no future. So that's when I kind of thought about it and kind of turned back into video games again. I started playing all sorts of games during a time when kind of like I had no more friends and was super lonely. I started playing all these single player games like Final Fantasy or Chrono Trigger, they made me feel like a hero going out there saving the world. And I just loved it. I felt so good and so empowered by these games. I learned so much. I also started playing all these multiplayer games like League of Legends, World of Warcraft, Minecraft. And I started making all these friends online, all these people all over the world who sometimes they don't even speak English, but they end up, you know, checking in on me to make sure that I'm taking my medicine, I'm getting the proper amount of rest. And through an MMORPG that I played, I even met a medical researcher who ended up introducing me to one of the world's best hematologists at the time that ended up giving me really great advice that kept me alive. The fact that video games was able to be there for me when basically the rest of the world system kind of failed, that was something that I just kind of like lived right through without really, really noticing. But about 2 years after that, I slowly recovered. And in 2021, I was able to go back to school again. In my first year of college, I, as a freshman, I started thinking back on it and thought, these games like League of Legends, they're not really made to help me, right? Like, I don't think Riot Games made League of Legends to like help some hospital kid, but it ended up saving my life. You know, what if I start making games with the intention of helping other people? What kind of power can we unlock there? And that's when I decided to start Serenity Forge. One of the first games that I decided to start working on was a visual novel called Loving Life. And this is a game that I just learned C++ and, you know, OpenGL, and just decided to start programming it myself. It's a short visual novel, completely for free to play online, 45 minutes long. And I just released it out there on Itch and also Game Jolt. And as my kind of like first year, just like did it on the side for fun. And about a month after I released the game, it's a non-fictional visual novel about my near fatal illness. So it's just a real story about what I went through. So about a month after I launched the game, I got this email from a kid in Spain. He was a teenager. He could barely speak English, but I kind of made out what he was trying to say. And the email said that he wanted to thank me because as it turns out that he was struggling with depression. And he has actually been planning to take his own life for a bit. And while he was going through resources online, he found my game, he played it, and it empowered him so much that he decided to put a stop to his plans, and he enrolled into a game design school so that he could start making games about his own stories. And that was really cool, right? Like, you hear a lot of stories about like entrepreneurs like making millions overnight with a really cool idea in college. You know, I didn't make a cent doing this. But I thought to myself, I might have just made a video game that saved someone's life.
I mean, yeah. Not to be cliche, but that's worth way more than just that instant get rich quick overnight.
Exactly. Wow. Exactly. Yeah. So that's basically, you know, I thought about that email and I was like, you know what, I'm going to actually do this for real. And then I just kept on working on it and decided to drag some friends in, start working on games together. And after college was over, we kept on doing it. And honestly, here we are, you know, almost 10 years later, we're still doing the same thing here in Boulder, Colorado. So yeah, that's basically how we got started.
Yeah, that's got chills up my spine. That is true. And I'm stumbling over my words because of how much of a profound effect it has on me. Because, you know, even before you're hospitalized, being, you know, a first generation immigrant is challenging. I can't relate 100% because, you know, I'm mixed, so it's different. But, you know, a lot of my cousins, you know, they have come over from Taiwan, and being familiar with the culture, sometimes even the slightest cultural variance can feel isolating. And it's a rough start, as I can possibly imagine. But then the illness, I'm sure many people have spent like a day in the hospital, a couple hours in the hospital, heaven forbid a week. But the length of time you've been in a hospital is very tough. Like, I'm just going to let the audience know, like, try keeping yourself sane in a hospital bed. Maybe you have the ability to walk up and down one hallway, maybe a circle if you're lucky. And that's it. You can watch really stale reruns on TV. You might have a nice roommate. I don't know. So I can't even imagine, Z, that toll it took on you psychologically, emotionally, to be there in the hospital. So I'm glad that video games, albeit single player, multiplayer, were able to keep you there. And I'm sure you've noticed too, since you are in that space, I do feel in the last decade, a lot of, well, primarily indie studios, developers are making games specifically with a focus on mental health or some sort of something of that ilk. So with that being said, let's see. Well, let's dive into your vision statement. How would you make your case that video games can be art to the naysayers? I only say that because we had a very controversial editorial on our website. Not intentionally to be controversial. It's just, you know, we love having opinions of all kinds. We like to pride ourselves in not being a toxic environment. But one of our writers at the time made a case stating that video game is not art. For Serenity Forge, it says, we believe that video games can become a vital part of art, culture, and education. So what would you say to someone who might have the view that video games are not art?
That's fascinating. I've I don't even think I've met anyone in my professional career that would argue that video games aren't art. I mean, that's, if anything, that's the hot take. I think any kind of conversations like this always start with the identity, or the definition rather, of what art is. And there's a lot of different ways that you can look at art. Art could be very literal, right? Like a piece of drawn visual, it's an art, right? Any kind of painting is generally considered art. I think it would be really hard for someone to argue that Da Vinci is not an artist. So therefore, you know, what he did was art. There's also kind of more of a metaphorical or somewhat more abstract way of looking at art, where it's like art is something that makes you think. Art is something that really makes you a different person, right? Like that could be anything. You know, someone flipping you off in the middle of the street could be art. That's performance art now, because it really changed you as a person. So I think definition of art is vague. And as a result, people can have different opinions about what art is. I think ultimately, though, it doesn't really matter how you define art. I think that the crazy thing is that video games fit both descriptions, right? Like okay, for one thing, there are a lot of, like, any video game basically has to have some kind of visual or auditory, or at least some kind of like touch sense for you to engage with it. If it's visual, that's already art by in itself. So from that, like from a really literal sense, video games has to be art. Yep. There are literal artists who are literally drawing every day pieces that are literally inside video games. So it's very literally art. And then there's the metaphorical, the more rather abstract sense of it, where it's like video games change the way that you think. Maybe something like League of Legends or Bejeweled or Angry Birds is not necessarily pushing those limits as strong as probably some people feel. But if you look at games like The Last of Us, if you look at games like Doki Doki Literature Club, there are games that are very much pushing you to be a different person by the end of it. The same way that a really meaningful movie would, the same way that a really meaningful book would, and obviously the same way that a very meaningful piece of, you know, visual art would be too. So I guess that's kind of my way of looking at art. It's actually a very logical way of looking at art, surprisingly, right? It's something a little bit more like, we just need to find a way to use words that actually describe what things mean, right? That's kind of what the point of language is. And if we can come to the table with the same understanding of what these words mean, then, you know, why bother trying to decipher the disconnects between like personal understandings? If art can be literal and can be abstract, and video games are able to kind of fit both of these fields, then it just makes sense to call them art.
Ah, really well put. I agree with you. Yeah, one game that comes to mind very strongly is Gree. I love that game, Gree, and it just takes you through all the emotions and steps through grief and loss. But
yeah, and that's a really great example too, in the sense that if you just take a screenshot from that game, mm-hmm. put it on a giant canvas, put it into an art gallery, I don't think anyone is going to think twice about that not belonging there, right? And that's Absolutely. Just one screenshot. A video yep. game is 60 screenshots every second, 120 if you're on a modern console.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's quite a lot of art to be outputting constantly, right? If you think about it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, just kind of shifting gears to a couple of fun questions before we talk about Serenity Forge as a company. So you mentioned you played some games when you were younger. I think you mentioned Chrono Trigger, but what are some of your earliest gaming memories, and do you have favorite video games?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in China. And interestingly enough, both of my parents were actually gamers. So video games for me was a very different thing growing up than I think most kids, for most kids. Because I think most people, it's like video games was the babysitting tool. It's like parents give the kids a game so that they don't have to deal with the kid.
My mom thought they were evil.
There you go, right? Like, I think that's a very common thing that you hear. So for me, because my parents played games, they had a deeper understanding of the medium. So they were way more open-minded about what games are. So growing up, whenever I played a game, my mom wouldn't say, okay, you know, you can't play games because it's evil for you. But she would actually like sit there and play with me. Essentially, it turned video games into a bonding, moment of bonding and family, as opposed to something that was kind of like isolation and escapism. So a lot of times the games that I grew up with were games that I played with my parents. And while playing it, I would learn a lot from them and also about the world. And they would ask me, you know, something crazy would happen. And my mom would be like, oh, so how did you feel about that? Why do you feel that way? And then we would talk about our feelings and how, like, what I learned from that experience. And it became kind of almost like a way for her to guide me as I grew. So with that said, a lot of the games that I grew up with were very kind of Asian, for lack of a better term, games like Taiko Rishiden was a big game for me. It's about the kind of the unification of Japan by Hideyoshi Toyotomi.
Oh, yep.
So I learned a lot about Japanese history. I learned about politics. I learned about the religion and everything. I really love playing games like Uncharted Waters, which is both of the games were by Koei before they merged with Tecmo.
Okay.
So Uncharted Waters was kind of like a geography game about kind of discovering the Americas and then kind of like setting up trade routes. And I learned so much about geography and world cultures through that game. I also just really enjoyed playing a lot of Chinese RPGs growing up. Games like the Sword and Fairy series, games like the Xuan Yuan Sword series. These games were kind of made in Taiwan. And they were games very much focused on kind of Chinese history and almost like historical fiction. So I learned a lot about kind of history and culture and just like the land that I grew up in. Those are generally the games that I really enjoyed growing up, which is actually pretty different from what you normally hear, at least here in the West, which I think personally also helped me develop kind of my taste regarding narrative and kind of pushing more of that kind of personal growth and character design into our games.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I'm all speechless. Sorry. I'll start over. It's because I didn't have that relationship. It's probably the more traditional relationship. My dad was kind of, he didn't care one way or the other as long as I got good grades. My mom was like, they're evil. They're invented so you would fail out of school so other kids who don't play video games excel. I'm like, okay, mom. Which is fine, whatever. It's everyone has their own thoughts on it. As someone who is a gamer, I mean, I don't have as much time these days. And I would love to know kind of your thoughts of when your kids get a little older. So I have one son. He is 7. I waited till he was 6 before I gave him a console. I was like, well, let me wait. But even before then, I would show him The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time because that was my biggest impact in my childhood. It inspired me to write my novels and stuff like that. So I showed him, this is what mama used to play. I showed him a lot of retro stuff or whatever retro is. And I realize it is such a great way to bond with your kid. And I'm loving having this relationship with him. So I'm glad that you shared that. I'm really happy that you have that story to tell with your mom or about your mom. So thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's I was really lucky for sure.
Yeah. Anything fun that you're playing now or is kind of managing Serenity Forge kind of consuming your gaming time?
Yeah, I mean, I do still play a lot of multiplayer games. I fire up Valorant basically every week nice. To play with my friends, especially folks from work. Trying to think, what are some games that I'm playing that wouldn't like somewhat give away some of the stuff we're working on?
Because
a lot of the games that I do play is like either I'm judging for an award show or I'm reviewing games that are being pitched to us or maybe like a previous game by a developer. But a few games that really kind of stood out to me in recent times. I loved Immortality, Sam Barlow's newest game. That was phenomenal. A huge life changer. Kind of made me realize just how deep the game industry can still go. And there's so much farther that we could go that we haven't even tried. Games like I Was a Teenage Exocolonist from Fenji and Northway Games. That was phenomenal as well. Trying to think, I love my Nintendo RPGs, games like Xenoblade series or Fire Emblem series, some of my favorite series. I really like those games. In general, I play like hundreds of games per year.
That's
so
awesome.
It's kind of tough for me to just like suddenly start picking them out because, they kind of, there's a lot.
It's right. Did a good job. You didn't give anything away.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, speaking of, stuff for work, Serenity Forge, let's get down to it. So Serenity Forge, like when I go on your website and just knowing your company from what I know you develop your own games, you publish games, you even have merch stuff. So how does Serenity Forge as a company divide work between those different arms?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is how'd you say it? It's kind of focused on kind of the meaning of what we're doing. So I mean, here's a good example. You know, like when we let's talk about merch. You know, we recently announced our partnership with Witchbeam Games to bring merchandise to from the Unpacking series. You know, a game like Unpacking was very deeply meaningful, very very narrative driven, even though it doesn't look like it in the beginning. Very narrative driven and really kind of makes you, literally puts you in the kind of the shoes of a person who is going through a several huge transitions within your life. So just thinking from that, and we thought to about how, okay, that's actually a really important thing for us to drive home. How can we design products? How can we release this, this idea into the world that's able to facilitate that vision and actually further push the fans to resonate with that story, right? And then that's kind of how we would approach that particular thing. And then also on top of that, releasing stuff like vinyl records for our games, being able to build ways for people to collect and hold and basically own a physical non-digital version of a soundtrack of a game that maybe they very deeply bonded with, so that they could hold forever. How do we design that soundtrack? What kind of fun secrets can we put onto that soundtrack or the physical medium as a whole? That also plays a major role into kind of our design methodology. So really a lot of it comes down to this idea of kind of holistic look. How can we make sure that everything that comes out of our company is kind of laid out in a way that is best expressing the vision of this story?
Okay, makes sense. And yeah, Unpacking, you're right. At first, we all thought, okay, it's, maybe just a sim or something. But a lot of people in Boss Rush, they rave about Unpacking. They just find something just so profound and hits home when playing it. So that's great feedback. So as a publishing house, I think you might have answered it with, going with your theme and your vision. So please tell me, we can skip this question. Like, how do you go about selecting games to represent Serenity Forge based on your mission and vision? Like, is it a mix between developers coming to you and you finding games and talking to them? Like, is it a mix?
Yeah, I mean, from a high level standpoint, we have very specific guidelines of what kind of games are Serenity Forge games. When earlier I mentioned that we create meaningful and emotionally impactful games that challenge the way you think, every single word in that sentence actually distills down to something that's very important and very clearly defined, so that our team knows kind of what to look for in their day-to-day lives. And then on top of that, we have this, we call it the list. There's a thing called the list within our company, and it's literally a list of something like 200 games that ranges all the way from like Sweet Home from 1985 from Capcom, like the precursor to Resident Evil, all the way to like games like Immortality, where we would put onto the list and say, like, yeah, if this game was pitched to Serenity Forge at this year, when it first came out, then this would make sense as a Serenity Forge game. So then we, kind of have this just collection of like what would be defined as Serenity Forge games. And then from a more kind of tactical standpoint, logistical standpoint, we get a lot of pitches. We get, hundreds of pitches every couple weeks. And then we obviously review all of them. And then we also kind of go out there and seek new games and talk to developers. Interestingly enough, a lot of the devs that we work with are either existing friends, friends of friends, or existing devs that already work with us and we're working on their next game. We generally work with kind of reoccurringly work with the same people, same developers, just because we get along so well and we like working with each other, and devs enjoy coming back to us to work. And then once in a while we get a pitch that's really exciting, and then we would chat with them and do extensive conversations. And a lot of times, I don't think we announced either of these yet, but a lot of times we would sign games with developers, and then they realize how great it is to work with us, and then we end up talking about either their new or even past projects where we can kind of come in here and do some additional support on their previous titles. So then it kind of goes all over the place where once we start working with one team, it just, you know, expands into all sorts of projects.
And then
I think another really main thing to talk about is just kind of our ability to kind of physically distribute. So a lot of the games that we do, again, very narrative driven, we also think about kind of distribution and lower barrier of entry. So we would think about games out there that, you know, we would look at and say, oh, you know what, this game, you know, reached a smaller audience, but it probably could be bigger. And it's totally in line with what we care about. So why don't we, you know, do a round of manufacturing and publishing for the physical, and then distribute that around the world. So then people get to kind of own that, get to collect it. And we really go very extensive on our physical releases. One of the games that we worked on was Genesis Noir, and we had this kind of watch working.
Oh, that's so cool! Watch.
That's from the game. Yeah, I changed the band out for my own, but it came with like a black leather band. Nice. So that was in the collector's edition. So you know, games like that, we would work with, and then have our team kind of design these very bespoke packages to really further kind of again the narrative and the creative intent for the game. So really, a lot of different ways kind of how we work with people and how we find them.
Lots of room for creativity too. When you mentioned something like that, it wasn't on the list, but now I'm curious, and I'm sure there's no hard number for this. But on average, how many games do you publish annually, or you strive for a range?
Right. I mean, it kind of goes from year to year. This year, we have launched Smile For Me, and we just launched Lisa, Definitive Edition. And we're about to launch Arcadian Atlas next week when we're talking, at least. And then we're actually going to be announcing a new game right after that. And then we're going to be launching, I think, two or three more titles before the year is over. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we're looking at. We're not a very large team. We're not going to be like a EA or Activision that's just cranking out games nonstop. But at the same time, sometimes, you know, it just kind of lines up and then there's a bunch of games happening at the same time. And then, you know, there's definitely a lot of adaptability, I suppose, yeah. You know, from our side.
True. Yeah. There's no need to kind of force a certain quota, especially if you're focused on quality.
Yeah, totally.
Smile For Me was definitely one of interest when I was at PAX. Unfortunately, like every time I made my rounds there, and like, I know there was a way to like sign up for stuff, but it was kind of crazy. I wasn't the most organized, but that was the one that caught my eye the most from the Serenity Forge booth. I did play a little bit of, I believe it's Lifeless Moon. That one was very intriguing to me as well. So I want to mention another kind of physical deluxe edition. I'm afraid of clicking on it because my Zencastr is not good. I don't want to crash this interview. But I saw that you'll be the provider of Shadows of Loathing, which when I saw that announced, I was very, very excited. Very funny game. I want to know kind of how you came into partnership and just generally speaking, the overall process about partnering to produce said physical media. Because I believe the first Loathing game was put out by Limited Run, I'm pretty sure. So.
Yeah, definitely. It's fun and refreshing to talk to someone who is a physical collector because you actually know what you're talking about, which is great. Yeah, so this is actually this goes way back, this particular partnership. So back when I was in high school, I was a big Kingdom of Loathing fan. So I would play Kingdom of Loathing with, you know, random people online and play with friends and all that. So I really enjoyed the game. And eventually, like, you know, you kind of grow out of web-based, because it was like a web-based game. I kind of grew out of it. And then many, many years later, it was like 2016, I think, or 2017, one of our games was selected for Indiecade. So we went and showed our game at Indiecade. And that one Indiecade ended up being just like such a phenomenal thing that defined who we are. We actually ended up meeting Janum and Nordhagen behind Gone Home, and then eventually Where the Water Sank Wine. That's how we started working together, is because I met him there.
Okay.
And we decided to work on the game together. But for Shadows Over Loathing, what happened was that our game was being booth right next to West of Loathing because they just announced it. They also got nominated for the award. So we're just showing the game together. And I was like, oh, no way. Like, I get like the devs will be there too. Holy crap. So I decided to take my copy of their DVD documentary that I had and like took it to them and got it signed by them because I was still like this kind of like, you know, just graduate
awesome.
college kid. And basically, Kevin and Zach from their team were just like, oh, that's really cool that this kid, you know, is just like getting us to sign stuff. So we just stayed in touch and kept on being friends. Many years later, Shadows Over Loathing kind of got randomly shadow dropped by their team, which was, you know, a move, and it worked really well. And the first thing that happened, and by the way, another side thing is that the composer for Asymmetric, for West of Loathing and Shadows Over Loathing, Ryan Eich, mm-hmm. is the same composer who did World of the Water, Take Wine. So basically, there's just multiple connections between me and their team. So as soon as that game got shadow dropped, I was like, whoa, that's really cool. I didn't expect you guys to just, you know, launch a game out of the blue. And I played it immediately, loved it, obviously. And so I reached out. I was like, hey, guys, congrats on the release. You guys want to do a physical at some point? And they're like, oh, yeah, of course we do. So then we just started chatting, and that was it. And then we, you know, honestly entered the partnership super quickly and then started working on it and just announced the game shortly after. So that's kind of how everything got started. It does go way back, and then it kind of like translated into something really
I love stories like that. Yeah. Was it, I think it was a Nintendo Direct where Shadow dropped, right?
They shadow dropped it on Steam like the year before.
Oh, jeez.
And then they shadow dropped it again on Nintendo Switch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Months
later. Yeah. And that's actually when we announced as well, around when we announced.
Okay. That makes more sense now, because I was just like, whoa, no way they really did that. It was a bold but pretty awesome move. So and that's the thing. I wanted to like, oh, download it right away, blah, blah, blah. But then when I saw the note of physical coming, I'm like, oh gosh, I have to get the physical. I have to.
Yeah, we put so many jokes in the brochure. Like, I can't wait for you to read that. It's going to be hilarious.
Perfect. I can't wait. But yes, big fan of physical media, especially if, you know, it comes with, I don't know, cool little ditties like pins and.
Well, you have kids. We put there's a set of car sticker, like window stickers for your car. You know, like the family. So we have those, but for Shadows of the Loathing, like, you know, art style. And there's even like little kids. I think we did like fish head kids or something that looks like fishmen. So it's going to be, it's pretty funny.
Perfect.
Like, I can't wait to use myself.
I'll have the coolest looking car because of that. All right. Wow. So with all of that hard work and year in, year out, what are some major challenges that you face in this industry?
I mean,
I know it's a very big question.
Yeah. I think this is something that can be seen as both a positive and a negative. But really, I think the main thing about a company our size, we're really kind of a company that focuses on creativity, is that the distribution and platform really, really dictates a lot of what you do. So what I mean by that is, I think in the beginning, you look at stuff like the PC gaming versus console gaming, right? Mm-hmm. And for decades, that was kind of the conversation. It's like, is PC better or is console better and blah, blah, blah. But really, like, you know, we settled into that pretty quick, and it was pretty straightforward once like the Steam and like the Nintendo, Xbox, PlayStation and the kind of ecosystem kind of sat in place, right? But where really most of the change is now is kind of this idea of like technology and services dictating creativity. So starting off with something like Apple Arcade, or starting off with something like Google Stadia, right? Your game is now being sold in a totally different way. Your ability to make money is very different than the previous idea of just selling a product and getting money, or even on mobile, something like a free-to-play game and then microtransactions. That is like microtransactions. It's like old people stuff at this point, right? That's like old people think about microtransactions. Everything else now, it's just like, you know, Game Pass. Now you're talking about
subscription service,
like exclusivity with platforms, which is, you know, I mean, if a game runs on a console, it's also going to run on the PC because it was made on the PC. Mm-hmm. So exclusivity is entirely kind of manufactured, right? So a lot of this stuff you have to kind of think about, well, you know, if Steam allows you to refund the game in 2 hours, if you play it for less than 2 hours, then you are not allowed to make small games because people are just going to buy it, refund it, and now they don't have to pay for it. Mm. So that changes your creativity because you are not allowed to make small games anymore. So that's really the stuff that kind of changes how we think about things. And from a technological standpoint, you can kind of trace down a few like big markers over the past 10 years or so where, you know, it kind of started off with like free to play mobile games. And then it went into like VR, AR, kind of this craze of like how that platform will shake things up. And then like, I think like the blockchain thing kind of started happening, and then it spiraled into NFTs, you know, a little bit down the road. And now we're kind of in the space of AI and how that would, you know, change how we do things. So every step of the way, every couple of years, this new thing happens, and then we have to look at it and learn it and think about it and wonder, okay, is this real or is this not real? Is this a fad
or is it here to stay?
Yeah. And then we have to basically bank our entire, entire company well-being on a particular change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and this, everyone suffers, of course. But you know, the bigger companies kind of control how that this you know rollout would be. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the smaller companies, you know, we just have to now go, well, you know, Game Pass is going to be a core part of our business because that's how games are distributed. It's not the same anymore, right? Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of I think maybe some of the challenges that we face, because really ultimately all we want to do is focus on the creative side, and we have to look at these tools and think about which of these tools are actually the best for us to express our creativity.
Okay, that's a really good perspective to put, because that requires you guys to be, you know, pretty adaptive, because that kind of stuff, like you said, happens kind of like every couple of years. So you kind of always need to be on your toes and think of the long game. Well, flipping that coin on the other side, how do you define success for your company? What would you consider a success?
Right. So I think for our company, I mean, there's kind of two dimensions, or I guess two metrics that we always look at. Mm-hmm. And basically, these are the two metrics that we always push to maximize. Number one, how deeply does one of our products affect somebody? And then number two, how widely is this product distributed to consumers? Mm-hmm. I think the second one is not like super crazy. It's like, oh, sell more units. It's yeah. Not like, oh wow, Sporting Forge really made something new here. But I think in the context of the first point, yeah. The second one matters a lot, because fundamentally, a game that is very widely distributed sometimes goes against the idea of deep impact. So I'll give an example. We very rarely, it's not like we don't, but we generally rarely engage in like VR, AR games. And then in the same vein, we also kind of rarely engage in mobile games. And the main reasons behind that is not because we don't love the platforms. It's not because we don't understand it. We actually do, you know, release on both. But it's more so that you run into polar opposite problems with both. Like with VR and AR, especially VR, you kind of have crazy immersion, like really immersive. You can tell some really deep stories and make people feel things they can't feel outside of that technology, which is great for our first point of trying to create deep emotional impact. But VR is very expensive, very prohibitively, constrained to your area, how big your house is, whether or not you can do room scale VR or you're just sitting at your desk.
Or if you get dizzy easily.
Exactly. It's a high barrier of entry. It's made for rich people only, and it's like only people who don't have motion sickness, and it's just not really what we're about. Because mm-hmm. So it ends up violating kind of our second point. On the flip side, mobile is the opposite. Everyone has a mobile device. Anyone can get in there and start playing a mobile game. But mobile games are also at the same time rarely immersive. I mean, you can think of some experiences like Monument Valley or Florence. Yes, there are experiences where it tells deep stories, but those are rare, right? If you think about, if someone comes up to you and says, I'm a mobile game developer, you're not going to think Monument Valley, right? Like you're generally thinking about, oh, another Bejeweled clone or another like, you know, Angry Birds or whatever. So I think for us, we end up engaging with mobile less as well for the same reason where, platforms like PC or console is able to kind of be in that really nice sweet spot where it's highly distributed, but also highly immersive at the same time. So I don't know. That's kind of generally how we look at things, and how we define our success is to make sure that we are both creating immersive, meaningful, emotional content, but still are able to be consumed by as many people in the world as possible.
Yeah, the way I view your answer is like you guys like to kind of try to stay as balanced as you can, which is something, you know, I appreciate, trying not to sacrifice. It's almost like a quantity quality type of thing. I know that's very generalized, but, you know, I see a lot of balance there. So thank you for sharing that. And I think, you know, my last question was something you already touched upon. So I'll kind of maybe turn it into kind of like a wrapping up segment. If you want to just kind of relist what are the games that you are allowed to talk about, or that either recently came out or is coming out like now that you can talk about, so our listeners can kind of keep an eye out for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So we launched Smile For Me earlier this year, which is across all platforms, which has been really exciting. And then just recently, like, you know, a couple weeks ago, we launched, it's been a week and a half ago, we launched Lisa Definitive Edition, which is a kind of a really brutal, miserable RPG about generational trauma and family abuse. So, you know, very, very deep narrative there, but also, you know, a lot of dark humor. And then we're going to be launching Arcadian Atlas very soon on PCs. And then, which is a tactical and kind of narrative driven tactical RPG inspired a lot by games like Final Fantasy Tactics. And then later this year, we're going to be also releasing Lifeless Moon, as you kind of touched on earlier. We're also actually going to be announcing two more games and launching them before the year's over. So, you know, a little too early to talk about those at this point. But, you know,
we'll really have exciting. To have you come back to talk about those, maybe.
Yeah, I would love to. That would be a lot of fun.
So
you know, we have a pretty full slate, and we also have a couple of you know, announcements and launches early next year as well. So yeah, look forward to them.
Excellent. So aside from fans visiting SerenityForge.com, any platforms that you want to shout out so they can follow and stay up to date with your news and announcements?
Yeah, I think the easiest thing to follow us is actually on our Discord. It's just discord.gg/SerenityForge. I mean, with the whole Twitter/X
change,
yeah, as of yesterday or this morning, X, so that change, I don't know, we'll see what it is, but, yeah. You know, at Serenity Forge on this website as well, Twitter. We are also on Blue Sky. We are also on Threads, but, you know, we kind of like made an account and we're just kind of building our audience there. So, you know, if that's your preferred platform, where we push all our content there as well, just slowly kind of transitioning over still. And then lastly, you can always sign up to our newsletter at serenityforge.com, where, you know, you can kind of get the most updated information. We only send newsletters about game announcements and launches to be, you know, just, you know,
no spamming.
Friendly. Yeah. So yeah, no spamming there. But yeah, it's that's where you get kind of most of the actual deep in-depth content about our announcements.
Great. Thank you so much, Z. So again, everybody, I cannot say this enough, but I will say it one more time, and I'll probably say it on this upcoming Boss Rush podcast. Check out SerenityForge.com/about. Is that /? Just click on the about part and listen to Z's story. It's going to hit and resonate, and it really, you know, hopefully it'll get you more invested with them and their games. I know I am. I hope everyone out there enjoyed this interview. I know for me it was a pleasure, Z. Thank you so much for your time. I wish you luck for the rest of your launches later this year. And if you're up for it, we would love to have you back.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was a pleasure to speak with you. And very much appreciate your kind words. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Bye.
If you want to be a Patreon producer, head on over to Patreon, patreon.com/BossRushMedia, and find out which tier is right for you. Our Patreon producers at the $5 tier or higher for this month are Adriel Munger, Austin Campbell, Celeste Roberts, Christian S., Sana Dierig, Francisco Santillan, and Rebecca Jewell. Thank you for your continued support.
1v1, the Creator Interview Series, is a product of Boss Rush Media, LLC, and part of the Boss Rush Podcast Supplemental Podcast. This show is hosted by Celeste Roberts. You can also hear interviews from other Boss Rush Media members on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at FairyCrypt. To get updates on the latest episodes, follow the Boss Rush Podcast, Boss Rush Media, and Boss Rush Network on all major social media platforms, or subscribe to the Boss Rush Podcast feed in your favorite podcast application. Join the Boss Rush Network Discord and Facebook groups to interact with other friends and fans. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.